Welcome to season 3 of the Fit Farming Food Mom podcast. I am Connie Nightingale, a former bodybuilder, certified personal trainer and nutritionist with an extreme passion for functional health and fitness. There is a huge problem these days with the standard health narrative. The current allopathic medicine, fitness theories, and nutrition guidelines are completely missing the mark. Through this podcast, I have been able to get uncensored, unfiltered knowledge out to the masses to help anyone. No matter if you're an average Joe or an elite athlete, I want to provide you with valuable knowledge to help you achieve your health and fitness goals. Remember, the best way to support this podcast is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes and sharing with your friends and family or tagging me in your stories or posts on social media. Let's get this health movement out to others. Thank you so much again for joining me. Now let's get to the show. Welcome back, everybody. I am so happy to have you here. I'm excited because I've been able to round up some great guests for the upcoming podcast. So I'm really super pumped about that. I think that we're going to have a good couple of months here with some amazing speakers. So really excited for that. Today, I have Dr. John Kim coming on the podcast. He is the owner and pharmacist in charge of Robinson Drug and Compounding Center. Dr. Kim is an advocate for healthy living and alternative functional medicine, and he specializes in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, women's health, vector-borne illness, nutrition, and cannabis medicine. He has a ton of knowledge in the functional medicine space, and so he's going to talk all about that today, what functional medicine is, ways that we can optimize our mitochondrial health, drugs that could affect our health, and all of the things under this huge umbrella. We have a great talk today, and we touch on a lot of subjects. So I'm really super excited for this episode. I think you're going to get a lot of pearls out of it. Towards the end of this episode, we actually begin to talk about breath work. And if you have listened to my podcast or have been listening to my podcast for quite some time, you know that I bring that up frequently. If you're a client of mine, you know that I bring that up frequently because it is so vital to our overall health, especially if you are living a high stress lifestyle, which really, who isn't these days? Anyway, recently I have found myself under a lot of stress, trying to manage a lot of balls that are in the air. And then my powerlifting meet got canceled, so it was another stressful moment after being totally peaked out and ready to go for that. So I found myself kind of getting into some old stress habits and bad patterns of thinking, and I had been kind of neglecting my breathwork practices, and I needed to get back to that. So anyway, I signed up for Robbie's app, which is called Othership. And let me tell you what, it was crazy how much my heart rate variability and everything improved when I started using the app. My Oura Ring told me that it improved by over 20 points after just a few days of doing a breathing or breath work practice. So anyway, guys, I'm going to put the link to that app in the show notes so that you can go check it out. But it is the Othership app. I believe if you click on that link, you can get a discount. But happy to share, and I think it could be vital in managing stress and helping improve your own recovery scores. So check that out, Othership app, link in my show notes for that if you should be interested. So anyhow, before I ramble on too much further, here is Dr. John Kim. All right, Dr. Kim, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. I was directed towards you from a other couple of people in the functional health space, and I am so excited that we connected because you have so much to share with my audience today.
I appreciate it, Connie. It's a wonderful thing to share about health and as well as well-being anytime on podcasts or anywhere. So I'm really excited about this discussion today.
So first of all, tell my audience a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, what got you going into this space.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Dr. John Kim. I'm a functional medicine pharmacist. I know that's a little bit weird being a pharmacist and dealing with functional medicine because I should be behind the counter dispensing drugs. Instead, I'm talking about wellness and prevention. So very different in terms of how overall pharmacy is actually moving these days, because my overall belief is that the doctor of the future is you, that we as healthcare professionals or pharmacists or doctors or even educators or coaches out there, we have to empower patients and people's lives to take care of themselves. And I think there's a major shortcoming these days in healthcare. Matter of fact, it's not a healthcare, it's actually sick care that we're dealing with. And that's something that I want to change, each person at a time. And so even in terms of my overall Instagram and social media, that's what I'm talking about. So that's a short introduction of myself, but I've been doing functional medicine and root cause medicine for almost 15 years. I've been a pharmacy owner for about 10 years now. And my overall pharmacy, we concentrate in doing compounding, which is customized medication for patients' needs. So we have a lab, as well as incorporating wellness and functional medicine. So we actually have a consultation services available. We have an entire line of wellness products and vitamins that we consult patients about. And that's what we bring value to patients' lives. I think anytime you're dealing with a patient, they're coming to you, not just about getting some simple need, but overall getting the complete care they're looking for. And that's what we're looking for. Not just about handing off medication, but overall nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle change.
I love all of this. Can you kind of, I know my client, like all of my clients and all of my listeners, they probably know a little bit about what functional medicine and functional health is, but can you kind of dive into that just a little bit so we can revisit it in case we have any new people that are listening?
Absolutely. So functional medicine, well, we have to really define what a regular Western or allopathic medicine is. So allopathic medicine, if you think about right now in terms of the internal medicine or the certain specialties like gastro or immunologists or pain specialists, they're very sectional based on the organ system that you're looking at. And so that's really vitally needed. And we have made so much advancement in medicine at this point that overall our life is better compared to what it was. Obviously, we're living longer, but also the issue now is that we're getting sicker as we go. So that's not being addressed in terms of preventative care, or end up having to look at the overall root cause issue, because a lot of times allopathic medicine or the traditional medicine we're looking at is almost like an emergency care to take care of the person in need at that point in time. And remind you that we do need it, because you're not going to be using essential oils for your heart attack. That's something that we have to really talk about and be grounded, because I'm on social media, I'm looking at some of the comments. They're like, all pharmaceuticals are bad and all, doctors are just there to ruin your life. No, it's not. They're really there to design to help you. And as well as in an emergency setting, like a heart attack, or if you're having a really bad bout of overall autoimmune disorders, certain medications may end up having to help you to calm that system down, or at least to treat you as an emergency care. And then we have to talk about the overall functional medicine approach, where you'll be looking at the root cause aspect of it. And I think that's kind of not being completely truthful either, because I think just recently people are looking at root cause even more differently, because when I started learning about functional medicine was dealing more in terms of the biochemical slash a systematic approach of the entire body, that there's a certain things that is happening, and that if you're seeing a symptom, that you have to take care of the overall nutritional deficiency the person might be having or something along that line. But now that functional medicine is really evolving into root cause medicine, where if you have a certain symptom, that could be a bigger picture underneath it of it all, that you may have to tackle certain things like certain infections like Lyme disease or mold toxicity or parasite issues. And then on top of toxicity, because our environment is actually getting us sicker and more, right? In terms of the autoimmune response is actually happening, what it was back in the early 1900s and up to at this time now is exponentially increasing, and people are getting sicker. So I don't think the functional medicine, in terms of what I learned back in the day, I got trained back in 2006 and 2008, we didn't really tackle as much in terms of what we know now in dealing with the root cause issue in terms of the illness or toxins as much to tackle that and really calming the overall immune system. But one of the things I've been talking a lot more these days is about mitochondrial dysfunction, because of the illnesses that we're looking at, the toxins, the stress, and trauma, that's the biggest aspect that we're looking at as well. All those things that come into play, which can lead into a hyperactive immune system. And I think there's a new term called cell danger response, where the mitochondria, being that even though it's supposed to make ATP, it's actually the brain of the entire cell in your body, that the mitochondria having a dysfunction and going through a danger, cell danger response in a hyperactive mode to respond to the overall threat that you're looking at. And then when the healing process the mitochondria is trying to promote, it doesn't end up having to heal properly, resulting in other illnesses like autoimmune disease, neuropathic pain. You're talking about issue dealing with PTSD, psychiatric disorders, and et cetera. And so you have to look in a bigger way these days. And so I was just recently in Nashville talking about how to optimize the mitochondria by looking at the healing process. And we don't look at this in a bigger way in terms of that we have to direct the body going into a proper healing mode. So this way, entire response that we're actually having is a healthy response instead of actually having it developing into a chronic illness.
Absolutely. So I love all of this because this is actually kind of becoming a more and more of a buzzword too, is the cellular health and the mitochondrial health. So as people that want to get our health straight, where do we begin when it comes to optimizing our cellular health?
Oh God. I mean, we could break it down to so many ways, but easiest thing would be eat the clean food, sleep well, de-stress, poop well, right? You got to poop correctly, and as well as hydrate yourself, and then exercising, right? There's a big studies looking at how 45 minutes of weight training exercise really optimizes the mitochondrial function. We forget about that we need weight training, right? And as well as being with the loved ones, having that particular connection between people are vitally needed. And especially when you're dealing with the pandemic that we had for the last 2 years, complete lockdown measures and people having additional stress response and all these illnesses actually that's popping in, a lot of factors into personal, interpersonal relationship that people are lacking at this point. So those are probably the easiest way to optimize your health. And then that's just a start. And then you have to really think about how do we tweak our initial response that we're actually having or any other chronic illness we may be suffering from.
Absolutely. So you're hearing more and more too about all these other modalities to help with cellular health and function, like red light therapy, sauna, you know, far infrared saunas. Obviously, cellular autophagy happens when you are exercising, as you brought up. There's all sorts of good and bad stressors when it comes to this. So how about incorporating any of those modalities? Or are there any of those that you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that we could talk about in terms of the strategies to improve mitochondrial function. The first thing is, exercising. I think that's the foremost thing you could do. Even in terms of people dealing with Parkinson's disease, right? They already have a mitochondrial dysfunction. Some of the studies that we've seen so far is that even a little bit of exercise end up having to improve the ATP production within the mitochondria. So that really is a medicine, free medicine you're already dealing with. So movement in itself is medicine, right? The second thing we have to think about, again, is sleep, optimizing that sleep for 7 to 9 hours, but also getting the quality sleep that you're looking for. So minimizing EMF, electric magnetic frequency exposure, blocking blue light, and as well as keeping your bedroom dark and cool, having that optimal temperature is also really getting a response and just getting that deep sleep you're looking for. So if you could keep your bedroom around like 65 to 68 degrees is probably the best. And if you could sleep naked, that's even better, right? That because you're able to exert that heat. And when you start to go into your overall deep sleep, your body temperature slows down, but that also optimizes your overall mitochondrial to renew and fix itself. So there's a lot of the benefit you're looking at it, as well as how you eat. What kind of clean food are you eating? I know there's a whole discussion about you know, supporting the local farms, and that in itself really helps to get the clean food. You're working the local farm, you know exactly where the food is coming from, but also you're dealing with the local microbiome to support your gut to begin with, right? There's an entire connection between the ecosystem and as well as our body. So looking at that and getting the quality of food, and then you talk about decreasing toxin exposure, we talked about, right? So lowering your BPA, so bisphosphonate, which can be an endocrine disruptor, but is also a something that's going to damage the mitochondrial function. So getting a glass, actual glass or stainless steel, and utilizing to drink water out of it, or particularly storing food, or the best way to do it, minimize using microwaves, right? So it's not really helpful either, right? I mean, I'm probably the worst thing that could end up having to put an example about, but you know, sometimes you get busy and so you want to heat up that food. So you have no choice but to use microwave, but minimizing it with the best way to do it. As well as the nutrients that you need to optimize this, or at least to get rid of the oxidative stress that's going on. When a mitochondria is producing that ATP through the Krebs cycle, it also produces a oxidative stress within the cell. So you need nutrients such as antioxidants to actually to deal with that. Detox is very important as well. So sweating is a good thing to do. So the next point that you're going to make is utilizing hot saunas, or at least a far infrared sauna that I like to do on a daily basis, because that in itself, one, you're going to sweat, you're going to detox. But, and the third thing is that it's going to activate your heat shock protein to optimize your lymphocytic activity, so your immune system is working better. So that's another thing. Utilizing cold therapy, like taking a cold shower every day, also actually helps to induce mitochondrial repair. So that's another helpful thing you could do. Fasting, I mean, we talked about autophagy. That's a good term in terms of how to clean up some of the cellular debris or damages that goes on by utilizing exercise is one. But then two, another thing that works really well is fasting. So utilizing 3 days of water fasting, or I love doing fast mimicking diet, another thing called Prolon that Dr. Walter Longo from UC Davis, he has a longevity center. He really looked into using fast mimicking diets. You're basically tricking your body into fasting that promotes autophagy, so cellular renewal response. You're talking about fixing your metabolic function, detoxing, as well as improving your overall metabolic function. So people who actually do fast mimicking diet, that actually improves their overall cholesterol level, improves your insulin response, and you start to lose a lot of weight and decreasing inflammation. So there's a lot of science behind looking at that. And then the last thing that is, even though I'm a pharmacist, I do tell people that taking drugs is bad. So you want to minimize the pharmaceutical drug exposure. So such thing as taking antibiotic or acetaminophen, so that's the basic Tylenol, Advil, all these things can actually disrupt the cellular membrane of a cell, but also it actually affects how the mitochondria functions. And so it's not a good thing to take a chronic measures of medications, any medications at least. So I don't recommend doing that. If you could resort to doing prevention, lifestyle management, utilizing natural therapies to fix your issue will be the best thing you could do for your body and overall longevity and your quality of life, rather than try and look for a one pill approach trying to fix your problem, because that issue that you see didn't just happen overnight. It actually occurred many, many, many years ago. Now you're just seeing the overall end results. So I do recommend looking at a root cause aspect of it. And then lastly, I do say it may end up having to come out in an incorrect way, but pick the right mother, right? Mm-hmm. Having the right offspring really depends on the mother's health, because the mitochondrial DNA passes from the mother to the child, and really depends on the mother's health to not even just to conceive, but actually to develop a healthy baby. And there's a humongous research behind that these days in terms of autism and how that is related to the mitochondrial damages that occur from the mother, but also the father as well, in terms of having a zinc deficiency can actually affect the quality of the sperm, but the quality of the offspring. And they also connect the drugs like metformin, which is a very commonly used drug within the diabetes space, but also anti-aging because it has been shown to increase longevity process. But metformin also can actually damage the overall DNA, resulting in an offspring having a poor health. So, you know, it's not even just you. If you're planning actually having a kid or you're planning having a family, things that I recommend to do is start detoxing, look at your nutritional response, and how healthy you are will determine what kind of offspring you want to have, because you don't want a sick child from the get-go once it's born. We have enough toxins to deal with. You don't want a sick child from the beginning.
Okay, so I love that you kind of brought this, the genes part into this, because epigenetics, people don't think about this, right? You have these young moms, or young, they're not young moms yet, but these young women that are going out, they're taking all the birth control, they're smoking cigarettes, they're partying, they're eating like crap, and they're like, oh, it doesn't affect me. And then years down the road, they're like, okay, I want to have a kid. I'm going to clean everything up. Right. And they do, but they don't realize that all of the previous choices that they have made in their life is now going to impact their offspring. And I mean, beyond even epigenetics and having children and all of these things, people, I mean, you might see somebody that's a teenager and they're like, well, I eat whatever I want and I stay skinny, so it doesn't matter. But then they're that person that's the 45-year-old pre-diabetic that, you know, has erectile dysfunction and they're taking all the statin drugs, you know, like it manifests over time in some way, shape or form. And we need to think proactively about these things, not currently in the moment. Just because I feel good right now eating a bunch of crap doesn't mean that I'm going to feel good in 5 years, you know?
Right. I think it's more culture that we have to see right now in terms of health, what kind of choice are you making in terms of food, lifestyle, all those are related to culture. And as well as, I think there's a humongous impact you're talking about in a socioeconomic world as well. Because all those things that we're talking about in certain cases, and again, probably some of the listeners may end up getting offended about this, but it is more of a privilege that you have to pick what kind of food that you're able to eat. Now, I'm not talking about vegan or carnivore or anything of that nature, able to have the ability to buy clean food, right? Having a clean environment, having clean water, having a clean house that's not full of mold or any toxins of that nature, right? So if you look at the inner cities at this point, right, you're talking and dealing with a kids having developmental issues, not able to have the adequate nutrition, having developmental issues, high rates of autism and neurological issues that's actually seen within the, in that aspect of it. So all related to, that's about the racial issues, more dealing with the socioeconomic pressure that goes on within America and within the world, right? Just because we're not talking about black and white, it's more the socioeconomic issue that's actually happening. So I don't have a perfect answer in doing that, but I hope everybody recognizes that there is a certain amount of privileges that we all have in terms of choosing what we could do. And we have the opportunity to make the choices to be healthy. Mm-hmm. So we got to be very grateful about that. But one of the things that I do end up having to talk a lot about these days and more is how do we educate young women to be healthy from the get-go? I think in terms of responding to give birth control pills very early on because of potential PMS symptoms or something on that line, it doesn't really help out. I mean, I have patients at 11 years old, young girls, they just start a period and they end up having to put them on a birth control pill because the actual period is getting painful. Well, there's an underlying issue because of happening that nature, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Why is that happening? Well, there might be some kind of an underlying toxicity that might be going on. It might be a insulin resistance, potentially a development of PCOS, mm-hmm. right? All those things are interrelated in that, but giving birth control pills where it is a synthetic estrogen and progesterone, you're risking their kids' lives in terms of everything going from increase in insulin issue, nutritional deficiency, because if you're taking birth control pill, it actually depletes your B vitamins along with magnesium, vitamin D, manganese, and as well as dealing with, what else is there? Toxicity, right? All those things are into playing at the same time. It actually blocks your thyroid hormone production also. So what kind of justice are we doing in a kid's health? You need the proper hormones and thyroid to develop properly. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening either. So these are the things that we need to let the parents know about. And the doctors has to do that as well, and the pharmacists, but it's not happening because we're so busy getting that patient the drug, get to the pharmacy, get the medication, and then take it. So this way, all the issues are disappear, at least controlled, and having to do so, but that's not happening. And then you're talking about toxicity level coming through, you know, unhealthy food and all these things end up having to cause additional damage metabolically in the kid. Not talking about a girl, young girl, but also boys as well. And then having to making poor lifestyle choices in terms of binge drinking, because it sounds so cool. And I've been in that scenario as well. You know, you probably end up having to blush if I tell you some of the stories that I did growing up, but we all did, right? So, but these are things that we need to discuss about that from the early on, that we need to make right choices for a better life. And I think the culture issue that we actually have is an instant gratification in terms of getting the medication quickly to relieve the issue, as well as how do we end up having to enjoy our time now because everybody's in a YOLO moment, right?
Yeah.
you only live once. So it's a big problem at this point. I again, it's all more of a culture aspect of it, because I'm a Korean American. I came here when I was 9 years old. But one of the things that I still remember early on was that my grandparents always talked about eating the right food in terms of the amount that we need to eat, that it has to be nutritious. So everything that they bought in terms of the just the produce alone was from the local farm or somewhere, as well as eating kimchi as a stable diet. I didn't realize how much of a benefit now that I'm seeing that is overall gut microbiome that I was supposed to support. As was, any time that I was sick, my grandparents took me to an acupuncturist, and one of the things that they recommended to eat a lot more kimchi. Now I'm thinking about, like, you know what? That made a lot of sense. High amounts of quercetin, increasing immune activity, and help to fight off that cold quickly. So all these things are related to culture and education, and how your parents and grandparents end up having to really direct you into the right health, result in a better life. I think that really impacted in terms of what type of path that I wanted to after pharmacy school, because I didn't want to be a retail pharmacist. I want to do something more than that. And functional medicine was the choice that I made.
So many good things we could branch off with on this here, honestly, because it's insane to me, kind of reversing back to the birth control and hormones and drugs like that. It's insane to me how many of these things are being prescribed without the actual consequences or risks and rewards being spoken to with the patient. And young girls aren't able to make these decisions on their own. They don't understand the other aspects of things aside from what they're being told by their doctor. And then there's not an adult in the room half the time when this talk happens. So that's another difficult thing, right? But then you're diving into all these other things. I mean, we're in a huge epidemic with mood disorders now. And if you look at it, a lot of these people with mood disorders are females, and a lot of them are ones that have been on birth control for long periods of time. And there's a huge link between mental health and birth control, mental health and our gut microbiome. So you start adding all these things together, and birth control is terrible for your gut microbiome. I'm pretty sure there are studies supporting that it is damaging to your gut microbiota. So you start seeing all of these circles of things that come back and manifest in multiple different ways.
Absolutely. So two things I didn't mention about, one, birth control pills decrease your serotonin production, right?
Yep.
How many of the young girls end up having to be taking birth control pills, and later on they're taking some type of SSRIs like Zoloft or Prozac to take care of the overall issue dealing with anxiety, right? Because they're lacking in magnesium, maybe, right? The serotonin is completely effed up, if you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so these are the things that we have to discuss about, and there's a inherently a lack of informed consent about how do we educate the young ones from really making a, you know, better informed decision in that sense. But also the parents have to make the right decision as well. It's not about the kid. Kids end up having to be thinking about, oh, this is the right way to do it because my friend Jessica is taking it as well. I mean, that's not the best way to handle that. Or they're not even emotionally ready, but they get involved in sexual relationship very early on, right? It's a healthy development in terms of having sex. The issue is that we have young girls or young boys who are not even emotionally ready, never alone. Their body's not even ready to take these type of synthetic hormones and what kind of emotional damage that we're putting them through, right? Right. I think the innocence of a child is basically disappearing. I think the overall culture is destroying it as well. That, you know, freedom of sexual expression, that's fine. The thing is, are the kids mentally, emotionally, and spiritually ready to take upon that and really help to understand and able to handle that issue? Mm-hmm. Many cases, kids are not. And that's the reason why there's a broken relationship that goes through as they get older. Having, you know, I mean, we could talk about this for hours because it's not even just about taking birth control, but you talk about spiritual health and emotional health, and everything's related into because we made poor choices from early on.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. So that can actually lead us down a whole nother rabbit hole because drugs in general are not being discussed with people. And I think what's happening, like you and I were talking off camera about statin drugs. And what's happening is people aren't being told the ramifications of taking these and they're not being instructed on how they can naturally work with this and fix things. They're just like, bam, you have high cholesterol. Here's this statin drug. It's going to take care of you. And then down the road, you have all of these other things start to show up. And they also have a pill for that. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, again, it's where you are in terms of a health. I mean, if you have a pre-existing condition to actually developing cardiovascular issues or, you know, hyper calcification and causing atherosclerotic plaque, I mean, those are very serious means that you have to really take care of in terms of potentially taking statin drugs and more, right? However, taking a statin drugs, even though I think still the results are very piss poor about this, that lowering cholesterol end up having to be helpful for preventing potential issue dealing with MI, which is basically myocardial infarction, aka heart attack. The issue about taking statin drugs is that it can actually deplete a number of nutrients, especially for CoQ10, which is really needed for your mitochondria to function well, but is one of the cofactors you need for something called the electron transport chain, which helps to regulate some of the energy responses to happen in the cell. And that's what you need for a CoQ10, but that gets depleted. At the same time, it also depletes your vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 is needed to help to reabsorb some of the calcium issue, as well as work in conjunction with vitamin D3, right? Vitamin D. And so these are things that are really important in terms of your overall heart health, your arterial health, but also act as an antioxidant and as well as energy production. There are studies available that shows that when you're taking statin drugs, especially for athletes, high performing athletes, it actually decreases their overall athletic ability to perform. So if you're talking about a high-performing athlete who are in the cream of the crop being a best shape, if you want to call it, quote unquote, what kind of impact are we doing to patients who are already chronically ill and which already know that they're dealing with mitochondrial dysfunction? You're not creating a healthy environment, and that's not a best way to taking statin drugs on a chronic manner. Another thing that we have to also discuss is that if there is a already existing atherosclerotic plaque as well as hyperlipidemia issue, you also have to look at, is it a familial thing? Is it a diet? Or third, if it is a existing infection like mycotoxin and mold, it can actually drive up the cholesterol production because of the infections that's already existing or the toxicity that's existing, right? There's a reason why the bodies end up having to increase cholesterol production, because the overall mycotoxin causing cellular damage, and so bodies producing increased lipid levels to cave off the issue within the cell, so this way the toxicity does not spread any further. So there's a lot of truth behind that, but we don't look at that right now. We're more looking at the fact that you have a hyperlipidemia or high cholesterol issue, you have to be on statin drugs because this is what has been recommended, right? Another thing we also have to discuss is that in terms of what we know so far with hyperlipidemia and average cholesterol level, is that lowering your cholesterol level too low can actually increase your mortality level as well. There's a study out there right now looking at 12 million Koreans, right? I'm a Korean, but there's 12 million Koreans. They're looking at the epidemiological studies in terms of, they found out that total cholesterol less than 200, it actually increased the mortality level compared to having higher total cholesterol, not total, not LDL, total cholesterol being higher, because you need enough total cholesterol and healthy levels of LDL level, which is so-called the bad cholesterol, which is not really true. That can also affect how much of a hormones you're gonna be producing, especially testosterone and estrogen, which is a hormone that you already produce, but it has been shown to protect the cardiovascular system. So all these things, also you need testosterone and estrogen for your mental health as well. Taking statin drugs actually can cause a unwanted effect of having depression, mental health issue. And then on top of having low cholesterol, especially for men, they have erectile dysfunction or having vascular issues in terms of perfusion, right? And so one of the key point, or at least the joke that I make, is that a health meter for a guy is his penis.
Absolutely. Actually, I almost went on a rant on Instagram about this today, honestly, because I'm so into women's health and stuff like that. I never really touch on the men's end of things. And I wanted to get on Instagram Live and be like, gentlemen, if you have erectile dysfunction, there is a reason behind it, right? I mean, there's so many factors involved, but you've got nutrition is huge, right? I mean, so many people are struggling with major nutrition stuff, but also stress. Stress is a huge interrupter of making actual testosterone. And 9 times out of 10 now, when I look at people's labs, men included, their testosterone is completely in the tank due to all of their lifestyle choices.
Oh, absolutely. And then you're talking about men with high estrogen level these days, mm-hmm. right? That inflammation, that's actually converting your testosterone much more into the estrogen realm, right? You're talking about a aromatase activity increasing because of inflammation. So the food choices that you're making, the type of lifestyle you actually have, actually make you a, you're gonna call it a woman, basically. Guys basically being demasculinized, right? It's happening more and more, especially mm-hmm. young boys these days, mm-hmm. right? Young boys having a overall, male characteristics underdeveloped these days because of toxicity that's going on.
Yeah.
Right? These are things that really have to be discussed about, and the overall toxicity. We talked about BPA, right? Having that toxin coming from plastic. That's a huge result in terms of having men's overall hormones being affected as well. So whenever you're doing some type of hormone replacement therapy, we have to have a discussion about detoxing, lowering inflammation, as well as getting your overall hormones produced properly rather than relying on some type of a hormone replacement therapy. Because things I see a lot of times is that, now we do compounds, so we customize medication for patients and we customize testosterone therapy. One of the things, a key point that I see a lot of times is that men who are taking testosterone replacement at some point within the therapy, within a 1 year period, they don't respond to testosterone at all, right? It could be because of the fact that they're taking too high of a testosterone, and so their overall testosterone level gets fully saturated mm-hmm. and your receptor is not working well. But in many cases, if you look at the lab, which is always missed, is that the testosterone converts to estrogen, mm-hmm. and estrogen blocks the testosterone receptors.
Mm-hmm.
Poof. I mean, it's just things that we need to look at. But the thing is, we go to the doctor's office because, oh, you know, I'm having a erectile dysfunction. I don't feel well. I don't feel energized. You know, I'm just having all this issue. And you start testosterone, either the injection or some type of topical testosterone therapy, feeling amazing. All of a sudden, 6 months to a year, you're like, shit, it's not working that much anymore. I need to increase that dose even higher, right? Rather than trying to look at what is causing that testosterone therapy not to work. It could be that you don't sleep, right? Guys who are sleeping less than 6 hours a day, they have high insulin resistance that's going on. And also having a sucky circadian rhythm also affects your testosterone receptors anyway,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's all interrelated. And then you have poor lifestyle choices. I'm not a big fan of testosterone replacement therapy. I was all gung-ho about it when I first started functional medicine back in 2008. I thought every guy should be on testosterone. And I'm looking back, I'm just like, you know what? All those choices I made and then tell the patients to take testosterone, I'm like, how many of them were actually just dealing with poor lifestyle choices that we have to really talk about it. But mm-hmm. guys are not really in that. They just want a quick fix as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hard thing again, but it's more dealing with culture, what kind of lifestyle choices, and then stress as well. And stress is the biggest impact on people's health and as well as their overall sexual health as well. You know, I make a little analogy about if you're running away from a dinosaur, the last thing you want to do is have sex,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're in a hyperactive mode and you're not really responding. And so I coined the term today that, you know, we have to look at your overall performance in the boardroom as well as within your bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and so that's one thing that both males and females alike don't understand is how badly stress is actually impacting their overall health, their mitochondrial health, their sexual health, their overall picture. All of it is being impacted because if you are prioritizing cortisol, then there are other processes that are being shut off.
Yeah, huge. I mean, when you're talking about cortisol, high cortisol level or even low cortisol level, especially for females, that affects their progesterone production,
mm-hmm.
right? And having low progesterone resulted in, I mean, especially when you talk about young girls dealing with PCOS issues,
mm-hmm.
you have additional issue dealing with heavy bleeding, your insulin response is piss poor, on top of the fact that you're having constant pain and symptoms. Those are all related because of stress, mm-hmm. right? So I had a patient that one of my patients invited me to their house for dinner. And one of the key topics that they want to discuss was actually giving me free dinner was to talk about their daughter's health. Who's, you know, she's 22 years old. She started working in New York City and then she just started to, be just diagnosed with PCOS. I was like, well, PCOS hormone could be a big thing, but there's an underlying stress and hyperimmune response that's already going on. Almost mm-hmm. like autoimmune. Mm-hmm. But you're dealing with insulin resistance that's going on as well. So lifestyle has to be changed. In those patients, you know, fixing their diet is a key thing that you have to look at, never alone giving metformin to these girls, right? That's mm-hmm. another big issue, but really clean their diet up. So I do recommend doing a keto/paleo, even mm-hmm. a Whole30 diet would be mm-hmm. the greatest impact you're going to make in the patient's life, but also mm-hmm. sometimes I do recommend doing fast mimicking diet for about 5 days, reset the metabolism, and then start a clean diet program. And that's really is going to be the biggest impact you're going to make in your life and probably the cheapest.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Stress triggered PCOS is like a huge, huge thing. Also, I find it funny. I've almost become able to, like, based on the biofeedback forms and stuff that I have clients filled out, be like, I already know this person's going to have low progesterone before we ever even check it because of all Absolutely. Of the symptoms that they have. And sure enough, they go to their doctor and their doctor's like, or they tell me this is the biggest sin right now that I've been, they tell me, oh, I had an ablation or I had a partial hysterectomy because I had heavy periods. And they're like, they checked my hormones. They were fine. I'm like, well, what day of your cycle did they check your hormones on? Like, were the proper metrics put in place before all these decisions were made? And more often than not, they are not being, those metrics aren't being measured. It's just like, okay, it bothers you, get rid of it. And so that's one concern of mine, is that all of a sudden now we're removing body parts like crazy too.
Yeah. I mean, I have one patient right now. She just went through a partial hysterectomy because of heavy bleeding issue, but also they put her on because there's some issue of her even tolerating progesterone. And so they decide to, and she's I think she's 48 right now. They decide to insert IUD.
Oh, wow.
Right. So, and that basically perforated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of issue are you doing with that? And, you know, nowadays, having that freedom actually when to have a child and such. I mean, birth control pills can be very helpful in that, right? I mean, women are, you know, much more career oriented now, and look, having that freedom and having that body autonomy, by all means, I encourage that.
Yes.
However, utilizing birth control pills or even especially IUDs, not talking about copper IUDs, but having that overall IUD end up having to be, you know, using synthetic progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, and this is the overall argument they say, is like, oh, it's localized. Well, it is not. Mm-hmm. You actually have an overall tissue getting absorbed with those synthetic progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot more issue in terms of that. And mm-hmm. to reverse that issue as well could be another thing that has to be discussed about. But I don't know. It's very hard to discuss about these things because I think people are not ready to listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of misinformation that goes on in terms of the doctor standpoint as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I respect them as well. But the thing is, you know, you got to tell them the truth about, all right, these are the things that's going to be potentially having. Mm-hmm. You may have trouble conceiving later on, or having potential issue dealing with potential cancer. Mm-hmm. More than line, what can we do to help you plan out a healthier family planning?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. None of that gets talked about anymore. So it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
So since you are a pharmacist and you are working also in the functional medicine space, are there any supplements or anything out there that you would recommend everybody take and that everybody incorporate into their daily routine in order to optimize their health?
There's so many, but one of the things I recommend doing is, taking a good multi would be great, right? Mm-hmm. Not talking about going and get a Centrum, but get a really good multivitamin.
Mm-hmm.
And good multivitamins, you may have to take, you know, 2 to 4 capsules,
mm-hmm.
right? And they actually have bioactive nutrients like methylcobalamin or P5P, which is a active vitamin B6 as well. So all those mm-hmm. things are really needed for your proper methylation and nutritional support, because you may not get the enough nutrients from food these days because our soils are depleted,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's one. And then two, I would recommend doing is get a good set of probiotic,
mm-hmm.
right? That microbiome support, not even just going to help to with your gut function, decrease inflammation, help with the digestion, but in itself, it actually helps to support your immune system as well. And then a third thing, if you want to add it in, will be either vitamin D, or you could get a, you know, good sun exposure outside, or you could end up having to add in like a CBD, or you could do curcumin,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you could take a phospholipid, like a phosphocholine mm-hmm. supplements that could be really helpful in terms of your supporting the overall inflammation. I like CBD a lot. Mm-hmm. One is going to help relax you, help you promote sleep. Is anti-inflammatory. It does have some of the, you know, natural forming lipids that you need as well. So that's one. So it's not just about pain. You can take that as a maintenance and to help mm-hmm. to support your whole body function. And I just don't recommend straight CBD. I recommend getting a full spectrum CBD.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a 0.3% of THC, which is also helpful as well in terms of unlocking that endocannabinoid receptors for other mm-hmm. Cannabinoids within that plant to actually work well. And then you're talking about things like turmeric. I don't really recommend curcumin, just curcumin these days.
Mm-hmm.
I like more of that whole turmeric complex right? So there's a company called Orthomolecular that actually makes a supplement called Turiva. Mm-hmm. And instead of just taking curcumin straight, which is not very bioavailable for people to absorb because about 85% of the curcumin gets destroyed in the stomach, they're looking more on the whole plant approach in terms of there's a different curcuminoids and other complexes of these root compounds that is going to be very helpful in terms of your body's absorption. And then when you talk about like phospholipids, like phosphocholine, for instance, that's really essentially needed for your cellular membrane. And that's also anti-inflammatory as well. It's because your, especially your intestinal gut is lined with phosphocholine. Right, so that's really needed for your gut function, but is also shown to decrease inflammation and really help to renew your mitochondrial function.
I got a question for you that just sprung up, and so I'm going to spring it on you here. How do you feel about peptide therapies? That's becoming more and more popular. Things like somorlin, BPC-157, ipamorlin, tesamorlin, all of those kind of things. How do you feel about peptide therapies?
I think it's great, but it's still a band-aid on an issue.
Right, right.
Right? I take BCP-157 orally, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I feel great after a workout. Right? I don't feel sore as much. I recover faster. I'm 40 at this point. And, you know, knock on wood, I don't have any mobility issues or having back problems or knee issues. I see my friends, they're like, they're dying. But I'm not saying this because of BCP-157, which is another peptide for it.
Yeah.
But I just added into my overall regimen now. I'm just like, wow, this is really helpful in terms mm-hmm. of recovery process. So it is great, right? Mm-hmm. And I was actually at an event this weekend in Nashville, and I was one of the speaker and talking about mitochondrial optimization. And there was another speaker talked about peptide therapy and how that's a revenue driving point to help to, you know, increase your overall help for your patients. But the thing is, if you look at every aspect of it, it's still a band-aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have a sucky diet, you still suck. So mm-hmm. you just fix your diet. That's the right. biggest thing they have to do. You know, and also peptides gets really expensive. And so is that becoming a holy grail for people with disposable incomes to utilize mm-hmm. and looking at it longevity? I mean, you're talking about like David Asprey of the world or Ben Greenfeld, all these guys, they really talk about peptides, but they're multimillionaires.
Yeah.
Right. You're talking about, you know, family who has, you know, four kids and two parents, and then you have all these things you have to think about. You think they're going to be talking about peptides at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Let's be realistic about these days. So right. I've been talking more about on my Instagram that making functional medicine simple again
yeah.
is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's fix their diet first, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
When you have a toxicity going on, yeah, your mitochondria is going to suck, right? Just because you're taking BCP-157 or other peptides, you're going to fix the problem? No. I mean, that's an absurd amount of stupidity that goes on in the functional medicine world these days. I really hate it. I don't really like to talk about just functional medicine. Let's call it lifestyle medicine.
Yeah.
Right? Let's change that. It's mm-hmm. such a bad rap that, you know, even I go to these anti-aging events and all they're talking about is anti-aging resorts to using Botox and fillers and, you know, all these things, right? And so that's called the anti-aging.
Yeah.
Right? Who cares if you look young, if you are freaking decrepit and you can't even move that well,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's talk about your mobility reasons. Let's talk about your stress response,
mm-hmm.
right? I see patients coming in, they're like, you know, I want to have a nutritional consult. And then me asking question, that doesn't even work. They're busy going full speed in terms of just having to pour everything out of their mouth about what the issue they have. And I'm like, all right, first off, you have a stress issue. Because mm-hmm. I just asked one question and all of a sudden just went, wow.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things we have to really look at is how do we change the person inside and out?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that's being missed at this point, especially within mm-hmm. the functional medicine world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all about, you know, root cause medicine and potentially taking care of mycotoxin issues and Lyme disease as such, the biggest issue is that those also cannot be addressed when you have a bad diet.
Yeah.
You can't address that issue when you are having severe metabolic issues, you're not exercising and such, because having to have all these issues in terms of mobility, et cetera, is all because of all the underlying problem they already had. Lyme disease could be one thing, but then the person's lifestyle and the choices they made, right?
Absolutely.
There are consequences, and not trying to be a jerk about it, but it's just like, let's have a plain discussion about this, that how do we have a healthier approach into lifestyle medicine, and you want to call it a functional medicine, and then having to go through that. So I even had a consult this morning about, you know, a patient actually had about 12 different supplements, and I knew she had Lyme disease, but I'm just like, how much are you sleeping? 4 hours. Well, that's not going to work. Let's improve that first, right? How's your diet? Well, I eat dinner around 6, and then late at night, I'm eating ice cream. I'm like, well, let's fix that as well, right? The foundation has to be fixed before you do anything, right? So I think we're missing that point when you're just talking about peptides. Peptides is fine. I would encourage it as well, but the foundation in itself has to come into place. Then let's talk about peptides. Then let's talk about potentially testosterone replacement therapy or something else in that sense of that, right?
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly with you. I kind of find myself in that space as a coach, right? I am helping these people with their nutrition and all of the other facets, but then guess what? This person is a hugely stressed out person and they can't seem to get a handle on that. And so that takes us back on every other piece of the puzzle, right? So I totally understand. I mean, I recently had a client, when he came to me, his labs were awful and his testosterone was low, but I was like, listen, we've got to address all of this other stuff that's going on nutrition wise, exercise wise, all of the things before we even talk about sending you to somebody for testosterone replacement, because really, we've got to get these other factors in check first and see if anything changes. So I wholeheartedly agree with you on all of that stuff. And I was just curious about the peptide therapy, because like some people, once they do begin to get everything all dialed in, there are more tools that you could add for performance optimization should you want to go further in your journey.
Of course. I mean, and I follow some of these functional medicine doctors, and they go to the these anti-aging events and they have all these fancy tools these days to really help to promote, you know, relaxation and such. But relaxation, breath work.
Yeah.
People are not even breathing correctly at this point, right? We're hyperventilating. We're not able to breathe properly through the nose. And so, you know, instead of spending all that money in terms of going to a doctor to get your parasympathetic nervous system to kick in, utilizing a machine, how about we dial that back and teach you how to breathe correctly first?
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
So I use something called heart math. I don't know if you heard that before or not. So heart math. So this is a simple device that I end up having to use myself. I'll send you a link afterwards that you can probably look at it as well. And you could become a practitioner of doing heart math. So there is our heart in itself, our heart has an intelligence, but that in itself is interlinked with our brain as well. So there's a whole thing called coherent breathing. And when our heart rhythm is out of sync with our brain wave, that's when the overall issue dealing with anxiety, hyper-responsiveness, and as well as ADD can actually occur, right? But we can actually change that entire response by correctively breathing. So there's a whole science called the heart math. Now there's a simplified ways. Now yogis have done all these breathing exercise and that's all part of that. But now with scientific results and studies, now we're able to really hone it in to really help to dial that down in terms of coherency between your heart rate and your brain to breathe correctly, but also decrease the overall response dealing with stress. So what I recommend people to do is 5 seconds inhale through the nose, mm-hmm. 5 seconds exhale through the mouth, but really concentrating within the heart that when you breathe in, your heart is actually inflating. And then when you're breathing out, your heart is deflating. Another caveat that I like recommend people to do also, and this whole entire technique of the heart math breathing technique, is to concentrate about what is making you happy, mm-hmm. what was making you happy, and some of the things that is going to really help to change that dynamic. Because mm-hmm. based on what we think, we change our heart. Mm-hmm. And based on what is in our heart, changes our mind. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's that entire mind body thing that's going on, but it's also scientifically proven to really help to calm you down. But, you know, if I wish I could show you the overall results, you could see the overall response curve. So mm-hmm. when a person was not in sync with their breathing and your heart rhythm, what happens is you could check on their heart rate variability mm-hmm. is very jagged or mm-hmm. is completely down. But when you have a person who's having a overall brain to heart coherency, you notice that the overall response is very linear mm-hmm. and in a smooth fashion that you end up having to see that you could tell a humongous difference in terms of your relief dealing with anxiety and as well as ADD and all the things that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So it's a humongous impact that I could make on a person's life. You don't have to buy this fancy machine. It's just mm-hmm. to help to track how you're doing. And I do this on a twice a day basis for myself, 5 seconds, in a, 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. And mm-hmm. on a weekly basis, I do 15 minutes. But what I also do is any anxious patients that I see for a consult, 5 minutes before they actually hang up, especially a Zoom meeting like this, that I actually had them do a heart math coherent breathing before they get off, you should see their face. When they first actually start talking to me, their eyes are completely down. But then when they're done with their breathing, my mm-hmm. goodness, the impact that they have, and the face is bright as can be. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself, making an impact physiologically mm-hmm. is something to see. And so anybody could do this. And that's something that you could definitely do to help with your health and really be grounded.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of breathing. I personally use the Othership app. I don't know if you've heard of that, Robbie Bent's platform. But I got away from it for a little while because I got too busy, right? And I started having some stress in my life recently, and I got back to it immediately. And so the crazy thing is I've got the Aura ring, right? Which I love. And oh, look at, we're twinning here.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But anyway, so I love my Aura ring, and I was supposed to be doing a powerlifting meet next weekend, but it got canceled last minute. So my body was pretty overtrained point, because towards the end, there's no way to kind of get away from the fact that you're going heavy and your central nervous system just doesn't recover well. And So my recovery scores weren't great. They were like 68. And that's like when it starts saying, no, you got to take a break. And I'm like, this is the last week, I promise, body, you know. But anyway, so I pulled back in the app between stress, training. My recovery scores weren't great. I knew I needed to improve them, pulled back in breathing. And within 3 days, my recovery scores are up to 89 and 90.
Yeah.
Huge difference. There are a ton of ways to and apps and things that support breathing, and it is a game changer in your overall health and your sleep too.
Sleep recovery aspect of it. When I had my obviously we don't have enough time to discuss about it, but I had a heart attack when I was 33 years old, and during my recovery process from that heart attack, it was caused by Bartonella infection that I didn't know about. But one of the key points that really helped me recover was utilizing heart rate variability. Now we're doing it with an Aura ring, but at that point in time, this was not existing. So I was using a machine called Omega Wave that my trainer actually put me through. And before a workout, he would actually check my heart rate variability to see how taxed I was neurologically and as well as physiologically. And so in a days that I was not ready to undertake a higher exercise capacity, what he would have me do is to do recovery workout, but not doing anything, but utilizing something called high intensity continuous training. Mm-hmm. So what that does is you end up having to be on a bike, for instance, or you could end up having to do lunge workout for about 10 minutes going in circles. Mm-hmm. But that overall continuous training and able to control your heart rhythm or heart rate around like 120, 130, increase cardiac output, but also it actually increased the mitochondria function. I don't know if you've done that or not, but I've learned that early on from my trainer, because he was on a side that he was a consultant for the Olympic team, mm-hmm. track. And so things that he used to do for me, especially being a cardiac patient and trying to help me recover, was to utilize the omega wave and then having to control what kind of exercise I'm doing and the capacity and utilize those recovery means to help me do better. It's amazing. And so if you look at, I think that at that point in time, it was 2015, 2016, mm-hmm. and the Golden State Warriors, they were using heart rate variability for the entire team. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They had the lowest injury rate on the entire NBA.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Stress and recovery and neurological function, all these things are all interrelated in terms of how you can be performing as an athlete. But if you could put that into the boardroom for the executives, so people that are out there, how many of them are burnt out to begin with, not looking at these things in a bigger way?
Right. Well, holy smokes, we could talk about everything under the sun, it sounds like, but I hate to keep you all night. So if people want to find you, where do they go about doing that?
Absolutely. I'm pretty active on Instagram. So you can find me at drdr.john, J-O-H-N.farmd is P-H-A-R. MD as in dog.
Awesome. And I'll put all those links in the show notes as well, so people can find you. I know your link in the bio has links to your awesome blog and everything else as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, John. It's been amazing.
It's been a pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for tuning in. For further information about me and my programs, as well as free recipes and other health tips, please visit www.connienightingale.com or find me on Instagram at Connie Begoni. I want to remind you that any opinions or views expressed in this podcast are their own and that they are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness or condition. This show is not intended to replace your regular health care. Please consult with your current primary care provider before changing any of your diet, exercise, or medical protocols. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time.